This is an emergency transmission from TV Cream.
Hello, I'm Graham and this is TV Cream Stays Indoors. In this podcast, I send someone a link to an old TV show and then once they've watched it, I call them up to find out what they've made of it. Today, I'm talking to Miles Chapman, who's safely inside somewhere in... Well, where are you, Miles?
I'm in Hitchin in Hertfordshire.
And all safe, all secure, everything fine there? I don't need to fret?
No, we're good.
So the video link I sent you was for the opening episode of The Family, which originally aired on BBC One in 1974 on Wednesday, the 3rd of April. Although the version that we've looked at on YouTube is from the series Repeat Showing in September 83. But before you'd even watched the link that I'd sent you, what was your reaction? I know you know the show.
Well, I do, yeah. And well, it was actually broadcast on the 3rd of April, which is my birthday. So I would have been 6 years old when it came out, which is interesting. But I don't remember watching it first time round because I was six and probably have very little interest in it. I probably would have been watching the Magic Roundabout or something. So, but I do remember it on the repeat. Absolutely remember it. And I, for some reason, I've got this issue with things that are filmed around that time. There's like a sort of grain to it that sort of offers a bleakness. I can't put my finger around it. You know that what is amazing is. Because it is so real, the documentary, obviously a documentary, but you can almost smell that kitchen. You know, you can smell the people in it. It has a real sense of brutal honesty about it. I know that was the first time they'd ever done anything like that. So everything, you know, obviously it was very tight in that house. So all of the shots are very close up, aren't they? Everything's really...
Yeah. Probably it's simply because of the fact that the rooms are so small, aren't they? That you've got a big camera crew in there with a big old film camera.
Absolutely.
As well. You're always going to be about 6 inches from someone's face.
They are. And they, I think it was a flat above a fruit and veg shop, which she worked at. And I did love the opening part when he says...
We chose Reading, famous for seeds and biscuits.
really made me laugh. Seeds. Now, there's some claim. It's amazing.
To kind of set the scene, so as you've referred to there, it was a groundbreaking TV series. It was TV's first fly on the wall, and it's following, in inverted commas, a normal family, the Wilkins from Reading. And I do remember, yeah. Actually, we're talking about the 80s repeats. I remember, you know, the matriarch Margaret was on Wogan because of the
That's
repeats.
Right.
And I remember her even then pouring scorn on this idea that this family was normal, because this is a family replete with drama in instant, isn't it?
Absolutely. It absolutely is. And I suspect that it did reflect many, many families that were like that in the UK. But yeah, it's for what I love about it so much, apart from the fact that it does slightly give me the willies, I still can't put my finger on it. What I do love about it, it is like a Mike Lee standalone piece, I think. If you slot it all together, the honesty behind it is gorgeous. And it a lot of it really makes me laugh for perhaps all the wrong reasons. Because the characters in it are just incredible. I mean, even though they're not characters as such, they're real people. But there's so much quotable stuff in it. There's so many amazing little moments, like when they're filling out the form for the council, and he's openly reading a Climax porn mag.
It's I like, know.
What?
That's incredible.
It is. Absolutely. Not at any point did I say, that's a bit inappropriate. She'd say, do you think that's a bit inappropriate for that? Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's incredible.
The house, the Wilkins house, is packed. And not only are there the kids, but there are the kind of the spouses or the ne'er-do-well other halves of some of the kids. So you're talking about 18-year-old Gary.
Gary, the eldest son, was married at 16 to Karen, who was then pregnant with their son, Scott. With no savings, their one hope is council accommodation.
Oh, and yeah, as you say, he's filling in this form. And isn't there a bleak bit, isn't there, where they're trying to work out the best way to get this council house? And she puts in a line something like...
My husband, who already has a short temper, is becoming more irritated at the fact that our condition has deteriorated.
Oh, my husband already has a short temper. And the way he talks to the kid, oh, that you little sod, and, you know, the whole thing's amazing. It is amazing.
It's kind of the matter-of-factness, isn't it, of the bleakness, the way she'll just say that, and she'll put it on a form with his consent. This sort of thing, well, I guess that's just their life.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the very start of the show, we see Paul with the Wilkins family. He's briefing them on what's going to happen.
As you can see, we're filming. It is going to be a tremendous intrusion into your privacy. because we will film everything, and there's no lights, so you're not going to be in a position where you think, well, once they turn the lights off, we can talk in secret.
Isn't it interesting to see a TV show? I mean, they're showing that to us as well to brief the viewer, because in 74, we wouldn't know what this format is. Isn't that interesting to see that?
That we need to, I thought exactly that, that we need to be, we need to have someone explain what's going on here. The fact that, you know, if you just started it off without any explanation at all, people just wouldn't, they would think it was a drama, perhaps, or, yeah, absolutely. That is really interesting. He's sitting there explaining and you know, how they feel about it. And the fact they're doing it all over like a really greasy looking pile of fish and chips only adds to it all, really, doesn't it?
I mean, you could probably tabulate how many shots in this have a bottle of tomato ketchup somewhere in vision, isn't it? I mean, it's
absolutely. Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's probably obvious to you that one of the reasons I picked this show is because it's the fly on the wall format, which, you know, you did with your Channel 4 comedy, Lee and Dean.
I'm Lee.
I'm Dean.
We run
Dean Lee Construction Solutions.
Yeah.
Did you and Mark, your co-creator, did you think of the family, or was it that time is long gone and you were thinking of more recent things?
No. Actually, we didn't think directly of the family. It wasn't an absolute reference, but in terms of its feel and its look, and I said earlier on about it like being like a Mike Lee piece, that has been a massive influence to us, and we wanted to create something that obviously was a drama, was funny, but felt real. It didn't feel, you know, that a lot of comedies are sort of cut and shot in a very sort of formulaic way. We wanted to steer well away from that. So yeah, actually looking back, I suspect maybe it was a subconscious reference for us. Obviously we had the obvious sort of jokes that land, but a lot of the funny stuff just came from very sort of natural delivery and natural characters, which I guess, you know, that's exactly what the family has. And there's a very early film by Mike Lee called Grown Ups. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Bleeding Gardens in a State.
It's got Leslie Manville and Phil Davis in it.
Get some concrete down.
And a Jaffa cake.
Once it's done, isn't it?
Oh, and Brenda Blethyn as well.
Oh, that's beautiful. Wallpaper's pretty, Mandy.
No, I don't match my curtaining.
You're going to redo that?
Yeah.
I'll give you a hand. I'll move in for the week.
But it's incredible. And that's one of his very early, proper sort of hour and a half feature films. Although it wasn't made because a lot of his stuff was made for television, he couldn't get it. So, but yeah, it's incredible. And it really reminds me of The Family. It's very similar in feel. It's relentlessly bleak, but hilarious at the same time.
With The Family, the matriarch, and I would say, you know, if we were talking about them as characters, the central character is Margaret, 39 years old, married for 22 years. As you said, she works in the greengrocers downstairs. Yeah. I mean, she seems very canny to me anyway. She's definitely not a sap. She's not being taken advantage of. She says,
our opinions are what probably 60% of the people in this country think, but can't put over. They've got no media to put it through. This is an opportunity.
She's probably right, isn't she? Do you think the way they're living their life is how most people were then?
Quite possibly. I mean, it's difficult to surmise that or make assumptions on that. But I think, you know, because back in 1974, no one had a platform to say how they felt. Not like they do now with Twitter and Facebook and God knows what else. But I suspect they probably were speaking for a large chunk of the population. Whether or not you agree with it, I suspect that, yes, they were. And giving people a platform for their thoughts and, you know, their opinions on politics and whatever. So, I think that's probably very, very true. And normally people from that background don't normally tend to get a voice. Mm. So I think that was very interesting. Just going back to your thing, the biggest shock was when they said she and he were 39. I was like, what? They look about 65. It's like everyone looks so old in the 70s, didn't they?
Oh, God. This is, I think, you were referring to as that kind of 70s grain. It's like a patina.
Yeah.
Because there's Heather, who's 15. She looks about 30, yeah, doesn't she?
Exactly. And Tom, I think, is 22. And he looks like, God, he looks like early 40s, yeah, or something, you know. And there's a scene with him. Sorry to die, but there's a beautiful scene with him when he's in the pub.
So we're at the gaffer's yesterday. Captain, I said, I've got a great idea. He says, I know what we can do.
and he's talking to the, I think it's probably a customer who's got a Trilby hat on. And the way it's shot, it looks like a drama. It looks like a little cutaway from the Sweeney. It's brilliant.
I mean, it strikes me that some of these people almost feel like archetypes, and maybe this program was profoundly influential and it did inform other fictional things. But Tom, okay.
Yeah.
So Tom Burns, that's who we're talking about, from Sheffield.
Yeah.
I mean, he is textbook ne'er-do-well, isn't he? If you were going to cast and write a ne'er-do, but now if you were doing that, if you were going to add a character like that into one of your shows, would you think, oh, he's a bit too on the nose?
Well, no, sir, not every bloke has his fling. Every woman has a fling. Even just one of the poor unfortunate buggers who got caught. Simple as that. I mean, I should hate to be in that sort of state.
You probably would, because he's such an accurate portrayal of that character. Yeah, you probably say, oh, blimey, no, he's a bit... But he's, yeah, you think... And there's I was going back to, obviously, his use of language, but there's a part in it where Marion, they talk about Marion, and, she said she fancies her boss. She had an interview. And there's a piece of language in it, and I thought that's exactly what Mark and I would jump on.
Marion Wilkins, aged 19, is Tom's fiancée, a fully trained manageress of a ladies' hair salon.
As if there's an alternative. It's just so funny. It really, really made... It's a fully trained manageress. It made me roar with laughter. It's so good. It's so good.
Let's talk about 9-year-old Christopher. And I was wondering if his experiences maybe... I mean, I know he's older than you were back then, but I was wondering if his experience is the closest to what yours would have been at the time. We see him being taught about apostrophes at school. We see him bursting into tears when his parents are going through his school report. And then we see him watching Wacky Races while he has his tea. Yeah. Is that a life you can identify with?
Oh, totally identify with. And I felt a lot for Christopher, actually. Because everyone said, he's labelled as stupid as a daydreamer. And I was at school. I was labelled, Miles is very capable, doesn't seem to apply himself. That was my sort of ongoing theme in my school reports. I think my parents are obviously very frustrated. And I think I probably had shades of ADHD, definitely. Probably still have. But his life was very similar to mine. I mean, we didn't live in a flat, but, in terms of the sort of routine of his life, and it was identical. I love the end when she's washing him at the sink with the flannel.
One more word from you and you'll be in bed. You're going to bed at 9 o'clock anyway. You're not laying up there reading tonight either.
I remember I had to go and stay with my grandparents. They lived in Brixton, the big Victorian house, and they didn't really, well, they had a bathroom, but it was right at the top of the house. And I remember when I was young,
okay,
my nan rubbing my face with a flannel, it really sort of burning, because it was like rubbing, that's the friction of it.
Come on, hurry up, I said. Right, now take that upstairs. Get your pyjamas on, and I want you 2 minutes, I'm coming up there, and if your pyjamas aren't on, I'm hiding in bed.
Yes, it's very similar, about her saying, right, if you're not in bed in 2 minutes, I'm going to come up there and give you a bloody hiding. You know, that language and that sort of scene, that's perfectly fine to say that to a child, but not only that, perfectly fine to sort of admit that to the wider public, was fascinating, I thought.
And the last thing with Christopher, this is such a tiny point, but it was the most nostalgic thing for me, which was he lying on the floor watching telly. And I always used to do that as a kid. I can't remember the last time I lay on the floor watching telly.
Yeah. I can remember as a kid laying on the floor watching telly, and I would do this. I don't know about you, I would lay on the side of my body and use my hand under my face. And then I would do that for a quarter of an hour until that arm went numb. And then I'd switch to the other arm and keep going backwards and forwards. That was my default sort of television sitting position. But laying on the floor watching television was absolutely something I always used to do. I don't think I've done that since I was 12. Perhaps I should try it tonight. Perhaps we both should watch a programme laying down, see how it is.
We'll do synchronised laying down. I mean, we're indoors, aren't we? So we've got to find ways of cheering ourselves up.
Absolutely.
Heather Wilkins is 15 and reluctantly still at school. Frustrated at being regarded a child, she eagerly awaits her dream of freedom and being grown up.
So we mentioned Heather passingly, so the 15-year-old, and it's said in the commentary that she wants to her freedom.
Oh, Jean's got this thing. It's a sort of vibrator. And you press it and you put it on your... It does for dandruff, your scalp. It's really good.
And then we cut to her, and there she is in a greasy spoon cafe with her friends. They've all got a fag on the go and they're talking about this vibrating device that's good for dandruff and body pain. I mean, what an interesting life she's already leading, I thought.
It feels like the life that she's leading feels like it's almost adults already. I know that teenagers did exist in the 70s, but I think your teenage years were literally that. I think you sort of got to 17, 18, 19, and you were expected to get a job.
Mm.
There would never been talk of going travelling or doing something interesting or do something creative. It was always like, right, okay, so this is the way it is. You leave school and then you might go to college. Very few, only the top slithers of society went to university. And then you got yourself a job and then your lifestyle repeated your parents. You could see that she was just going down exactly the same road as her mum and dad, you know. But yeah, I was really interested. They all seemed like they're in their 30s sitting in that cafe rather than all being sort of, well, my daughter's 15. And I looked at them and I thought, no, there's nothing like my daughter at all, you know. Really interesting.
And I am interested to follow up on what you were saying there about the kind of life that is expected for them, because what we're looking at here is a very functional life, isn't it? Where the jobs they're going for are things like working in a hairdresser's or, you know, as a receptionist or working on the buses. And I wondered if also, you know, you're talking about the language that was used around the kids. Sounds quite violent language, but actually everything is kind of just quite functional back then, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely was. I mean, my dad worked for the bank. My mum was a secretary. I mean, you know, they were fairly sort of straightforward jobs. And I was always told that, you know, just get yourself a decent job. And I worked in insurance years and I absolutely bloody hated it. It was completely the worst decision. I was just absolutely not suited for working in an insurance company in any way, shape or form. But yeah, I think that things were so different back then. The expectation of kids to be adults as soon as possible was really intense, I think. Like I said before, you know, there was no opportunity. Or if you said, right, well, I'm going to go off travelling around Asia for 2 years, they'd have gone, what? And I suspect that for the kids, it probably would never even have crossed their mind. And I suspect that, you know, even going to London was seen as incredibly exotic. Their life probably revolved in and around Reading, apart from an annual holiday to Yarmouth or something, and that was probably it. So that sounds really snobby, but it's not meant like that, because so many people's lives were like that years ago. And that's, you know, that's kind of the reality of it. The opportunities to do something exciting cost a lot of money, and it's also to do with education, information. People probably weren't aware what else was out there for them. You know.
And I suppose there is this idea, isn't it, that, you know, this is it's not quite a sinking ship that Margaret has, but she does need them all to contribute to it as soon as possible, doesn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. She seems to be the only one sort of bailing the water out. She wants them all to get jobs so they can help to pay towards run that house and all the people in it. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think the documentary has a point of view on the Wilkins, or is it, do you think that it is just placidly following them around?
I think it's difficult to tell on. I'd like to revisit and watch all the eps, because I think that sort of would tell the story a bit better. But just on watching the first ep, I think they're telling their own point of view rather than the document. Do you know what I mean? Because I suspect that they weren't prodded or goaded or encouraged to talk about certain things in a certain way by the crew in their house. I could be wrong about that. I mean, am I right in saying that they just literally just press record and off they went and just got what they had and then went away and cut it all and presented it to them? So I think that, they're kind of telling their own agenda and their story as it goes on, without it sort of coming from the crew or from the camera guys. So
I mean, I think you're right. I get the impression that what they did was, they did, the BBC and Paul Watson and his team did some great research to make sure they had a family who had loads of, an inverted commas, storylines, but then knew that, okay, once you've got that, you're in that situation, it's going to kind of produce itself. And there is a bit at the start which I thought was really interesting. If we go back to that first scene where there's that kind of briefing around the fish and chips at the table, where Margaret actually tells, you know, the film crew,
difficult thing you're going to have with this is when you're filming us, we've got used to it, it doesn't bother us. We've got people, say when I'm at work, we've got people coming, what's going on? What are they doing?
And I thought, man, that was a savvy point.
Yes, Absolutely. And then what I did love as well, I was just going to say, was I meant to with that opening scene. She said, "We haven't got any objections, have we?"
What about you, Heather? Have you got any objections?
And just her face, clearly a huge objection.
Everything about that start with this kind of continuous zoom, isn't it, through the mantelpiece and pictures and things. And it's incredibly spooky and unsettling.
The music's horrible. It's really horrible. And I think going with that, like you say, that sort of pattern and that grain that using, because years ago they would film, in fact, old sitcoms would do this, where the inside scenes were filmed on video. And then the outdoor scenes were filmed on film, and as a stark difference, only because they didn't have to plug them in, so they had to use film. And I find that really interesting. The whole of that was filmed in film, and that feel that it has when it's on film rather than video adds, I think, to the sort of overall bleakness and pattern of it. And that juxtaposed with the music makes it, oh God, I find it quite a tricky watch, actually, because I think if I was in that house, I think I'd be suffering from profound depression. I just wouldn't be able to handle it, you know.
Do you recognise that 70s Britain? I mean, do you recognise the land where a telephone would live on a side table in the front room?
Oh, yeah, totally. Absolutely. I was born in 1968. So, like I say, I was six when that came out. So I lived right through the 70s and I remember it really well. But only kind of from like a childlike point of view. You know, I had a lovely upbringing. My parents are lovely. My grandparents are lovely. So I had quite an idyllic childhood. But I do remember this. Yeah, I totally remember the telephone on the side table. I remember such bizarre things like if you picked up the phone and dialed 1-6, there was it was called disco, where you'd listen to a latest hit down the phone. And you paid for it. And the sound quality was shit, and you still paid for it. And the only time that wasn't on is if the cricket results are on, then they put them on 1-6. Well, weird stuff like that. You can't imagine that was part of our lives, you know. But I remember it very, very clearly. The 70s like that, and the fact that, you know, Sundays were just nothing going on at all anywhere. You know, it was very quiet, and you know, well, much like it is now, actually. You are. I'm coming home soon.
I'm gonna make you a star. I mean, we're trying to get through these days. How did the family fit into your day? Did it help? Did it cheer you up? Did it bring you down?
It didn't bring me down, actually. It just took me to another place for half an hour. I watched it twice, actually, made notes. So, kind of made me feel very fortunate for how things are now. Not right now, because right now is a bit of a rubbish time for everyone, but I mean generally our life now and the opportunities that we have. There's some better things from back then, but there's certainly some worse things as well. I'm very grateful for the life that I have. It kind of, like I say, if I had to jump back to that era now, I think I'd be profoundly depressed just because for the lack of opportunities. Like those people, like I say, living in that house, just through lack of information and education, wouldn't be aware that actually you can do anything you want. You know, that I bet they were watching those filmmakers. Not one of them would have thought, I'd like to be a filmmaker. Or if they did, they certainly wouldn't have any opportunity to find out how I would go about doing that. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you're the filmmakers, I'm the person that just goes to the pub and then and works for the buses or becomes a hairdresser at the age of 16, you know.
Lastly then, how are you finding life in lockdown? What are you doing with this time?
Well, interesting. It's the busiest I've been in a while. We're doing some Lee and Dean online content, which has been really, really brilliant. We're doing that for the Audio Content Fund. They had some money that they wanted to give. So we put a pitch in, and they loved it. So we're doing these online content for them, which is brilliant. So really enjoying that. I'm doing another couple of projects as well. Still doing If You're Happy and You Know It podcast. In fact, we're doing one hopefully soon on Zoom, which is great. And I'm busy. I'm really busy. I've got a lot of stuff going on. And it's actually, I'll tell you what's been really nice. I'm a really keen cook as well. I love cooking. And this has felt like an opportunity to really sort of make stuff and do stuff, because I don't normally have a huge amount of time. And that's exactly kind of what I've got more of at the moment. So it's been nice to get involved in the kitchen and do some more interesting stuff. That's been great. And just keeping an eye on the house, do a bit of gardening, catching up with stuff I haven't watched for ages, catching up with stuff on Netflix and listen to music more and reading more. Enjoy is perhaps the wrong word. That sounds really, and I know some people are having a terrible, terrible time of it. And, you know, I know a couple of people personally who have lost relatives through this wretched COVID thing. So, God, all love to them, but it's an odd time. I saw some pictures of, someone sent some pictures of London online the other week, and it's just weird. Oxford Street almost deserted, Piccadilly Circus deserted. It's so, so strange, so strange. It's like 28 days later, 28 days later, you know, with that sort of deserted London. So, so weird. Yeah.
Thank you, Miles. Thank you for watching The Family. Thank you for talking to me about it.
Now, stay indoors.